Many commentators have argued that podcasts were a key factor in the rise of Donald Trump. In fact, his campaign openly thanked several podcast hosts on election night for helping Trump win the presidency for the second time. Joe Rogan, who is sometimes thought of as a conservative commentator, is one of the more influential podcasters in the U.S. But researchers at New York University's Center for Social Media, AI, and Politics say that Joe Rogan of the right is also Joe Rogan of the center and Joe Rogan of the left, and that, they suggest, is what makes him so effective as an influencer. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Kylan Rutherford, a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Social Media, about the complexity of the podcast world.
The results of your research, was that something you expected, or you were kind of neutral in the beginning and didn't know what to expect?
Yeah. So our interest in podcasts kind of started right after the results in 2024. We were trying to unpack how different platforms and sources of information may have influenced the outcome. So we looked at podcasts. We knew that there was the Joe Rogan endorsement. And so the question was, a lot of the kind of communal wisdom was that Joe Rogan was pushing people to the right, and a lot of these other ecosystems were pushing people to the right, and that's why Trump was able to gain so many votes. But then as we were digging in, we found it's actually not that clean cut. You know, early on, before, you know, Trump, Rogan was actually a Bernie bro. And in a lot of these podcast channels, there is conservative stuff, and we're not, like, there are, you know, very conservative, very extreme right leaning moments in the episodes and in the channels overall, but there's also a balance. There are a surprising amount of instances where there are very liberal takes, or at least takes and opinions that don't cleanly fit into left and right.
Well, I know that Joe Rogan was very much against what the Israelis were doing in Gaza, for example. Yeah, he was kind of identified as someone on the right, at least by the time the election rolled around. So why do you think these podcasts are so popular? Or was that, I mean, that might not have been part of your research.
Yeah, so we're trying to unpack that right now. We've been working with Edison Research. They have some great consumption data, and we're trying to understand, one, just how popular are these channels. To give you an idea of how popular Joe Rogan himself is in the ecosystem, based on the Edison data, he has about three times as many listeners and consumers than the second place show, which is Crime Junkie. So it's such a distorted space, and Joe Rogan is such a primary voice. Comparing that to music, if my numbers are right, Bruno Mars is one of the highest monthly streamed artists. If you found somebody who, like, basically the gap between Joe Rogan and second place in the podcast ecosystem is the same as Bruno Mars and spot 50 in music. So one, like, when you study and you think about podcasts, it really is all Joe Rogan. He is a huge force in the space. And one of the reasons that it's popular, and one of the things that people are trying to replicate, is Joe Rogan's model of just shooting the breeze.
Yeah, he's just this curious guy who talks to anybody, and he's just like the ordinary guy trying to find out stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it stands in contrast to what, you know, the general narrative of social media has been, in that attention spans are shrinking, people want short-form video content on TikTok, and yet you get Joe Rogan who's just uncut 3 hours of talking. And it's very raw, and it's very conversational, and it generates what a lot of academics have called parasocial relationships, where the listener, they don't just listen to this person as a source of information, but they really act as if they were a friend or in their network. They respond to what they say as if they were also in the room listening and engaging in the conversation.
So are these podcasts a bigger deal than, say, radio talk shows?
A lot of people have been trying to make the case that Joe Rogan is the new Rush Limbaugh. I don't know. A lot of people still listen to radio. I don't. I definitely come from a generation that didn't grow up with that. So I understand that space a little bit less. And it's also really hard to trace. Like, we can have data on monthly listeners we know the podcast was playing in their house, but a lot of people, when we ask them, what are you doing when you listen to the podcast, they put it on the background as white noise. You put on the nightly news, if something pops your interest, you'll peek into the room, but other than that, you're gonna finish up your chore or eat dinner.
So in terms of how Joe Rogan would compare to something that's identified more on the left, like the Young Turks or the Majority Report, the latter shows would have a much smaller audience, you would say.
Yeah, so the audiences are a lot smaller, and with podcasts, it's really hard to estimate like the consumption levels because you can get them through Spotify, you can get them through Apple Music. A lot of people have YouTube channels associated with their podcasts, and then you can go directly to what's called an RSS feed or to the podcast website and just download the audio for yourself. So it's hard to get like a clear this one is better than the others. For example, if you look at just estimating YouTube consumption patterns, you'd get a different top 50 than if you estimated the Spotify's top 50, Apple Music's top 50, because they're just different ways. However, across pretty much all of these platforms, Joe Rogan dwarfs any of the, what we would say traditionally like the left-leaning shows. The New York Times is the daily is the third most popular, but the difference between that, and this is like aggregated, our best guess at like across all of these platform consumption data, Joe Rogan has about four times as many monthly listeners as The Daily.
So there's nothing in the podcast world like the Nielsen ratings used to be for TV,
So
or
Edison,
maybe still are. I don't know.
yeah, Nielsen rated. We actually, my fiance and I just got an invitation to take the Nielsen survey. So we know that they're still going. But
If
yeah.
I've ever known anyone who got an invitation.
I know. We saw it in the mail and she's like, what is this? And I'm like, I know what this is and we're taking it. I was so
Radio has
excited.
the Arbitrons.
Yeah, and so Edison Research has been trying to do a similar thing as the Nielsen ratings with podcasts. I believe Nielsen is also collecting some data on podcast consumption.
Is there any data on whether it matters how long you listen to these shows?
Yeah, that's something that our lab is trying to work on right now. We're brainstorming some lab experiments that we can do to see, is it a sound bite or is it you have to be sitting down? We know with some research, Daniela, I'm going to butcher these names, Daniela Schlutz and Imke Hadar, they have been doing some work on podcasts in Germany and understanding kind of what is able to trigger this parasocial relationship so that podcasts can have, this kind of extra influence on people's opinions and behaviors. And it doesn't take a ton. You don't even have to watch a video, just listening to the audio a few times can lead to what looks like this parasocial relationship.
I hear that on radio with both political talkers and sports talk people, they have regular callers and they kind of know about their personal lives and they're kind of like friends, to a greater extent, I would say, than maybe Facebook friends, but that's a whole other subject. So do you think that your research on this is kind of groundbreaking, or have there been other researchers who have done similar work?
Yeah, we're trying to get it out as fast as possible. We know a few other teams who are working on it right now. Some of our friends, yeah, Dominique Stetula and John Green have been working on something similar to this. There are a few other teams who are collecting podcast data. What sets us apart is we have just this massive pipeline where, we're looking at Joe Rogan, we're looking at Theo Von, a lot of these primary voices, but we're also just collecting, transcribing, and analyzing transcripts from all of the top 300 channels. And we have, as bandwidth increases, we're going to keep collecting from, the less popular ones. So what sets us apart is just kind of the magnitude. And also, rather than just looking at, a description of an episode or trying to look at only consumption data, we're really trying to tackle what is being said in these spaces, which is a brutal effort. My collaborator, Melina Much, has led the charge, as well as Edwin and Jason, our engineers, have really helped us to build out this collection pipeline because like just Joe Rogan, one episode is 3 hours and he's posting several times a week. And we're trying to understand all the way back to 2016 what's going on. And if you multiply that by 300 channels, it's a lot of audio.
And you're pretty confident in your methodology. Questions haven't been raised after that, maybe you didn't do this or that right.
Yeah, we're actively kicking the tires and we're consistently getting better. What we've done to validate, we're using a lot of AI tools because of the scale to label, both what topics are being discussed, whether it's about politics, the left-leaning and right-leaning. Our performance is pretty well. It's about where we'd expect. And every time a new AI model comes out, we're rerunning what we can, testing and improving. right now there is some noise in our measures. Me and my co-authors, we don't always agree, is this left-leaning or right-leaning? Because sometimes it's really hard to put it in one of those buckets or the other. And, speaking of Joe Rogan, that's one of the things he prides himself on, is his like heterodox approach, where he's like, I don't fit on the left or the right. It's a very different viewpoint. So there are some things that even, an expert human doesn't always agree which bucket we should put it in, but we're pretty confident we're getting better.
And besides Joe Rogan, what would be some of the other major podcasters that you would look at or have looked at?
Yeah. So one of the challenging things initially, we've been debating how we should build our like kind of focal set. We initially thought, okay, let's just pick whichever ones are rated the most popular, but we're also interested in figuring out where our key politicians going. So we started with just let's look at all of the podcasts that Trump did an interview on in the lead up to 2024, and we keep finding them. The story was that he went to Barron Trump and literally just asked, who should I visit? And then he worked with Dana White to set up interviews. And like podcasts that are like not even in the top 10th percentile of listeners he was on. He literally just went where young men were interested. And so we've got, the batch of, we know that a lot of people are listening to these. And then we've got, where is Trump? Where did Harris go? We're looking at, Gavin Newsom. We're looking at the kind of the networks of the guests. And, if somebody is going on Joe Rogan, what other shows are they going on? Do we need to care about those? So it's kind of a constantly expanding and evolving list.
So, would you say that TV and radio are still major players, or have they been overshadowed?
They are absolutely still players. This is definitely something new.
Not to mention the printed media, that's another story.
Exactly.
Okay.
Print media, local radio. They're all different kind of consumption patterns. And one of the interesting things with our kind of fragmented media ecosystem, even if you're not watching TV live, or you're not listening to Joe Rogan regularly, TikTok, X, Facebook, Instagram, clips from all of these sources are being posted there, sometimes with absolutely no context. So even people who we are like in our data wouldn't be a monthly listener of Joe Rogan, or watching CNN or Fox News regularly, they're still getting exposed to this content in their feeds on other platforms. All of these sources are still relevant as social media kind of shapes us into an attention economy, where interest in following news, it has waxed and waned over time. And so if you want people to get interested in politics, you need to find a catchy soundbite, so that if they don't want to listen to 3 hours of Joe Rogan, there's a 30-second video that'll get them fired up.
Yeah, it seems like every single day people are putting out stuff. What did Trump do today? And you got the woman who was the what was she? The pardon attorney for the Department of Justice. She puts out stuff pretty regularly. And there's a woman from Louisiana. What does she start her podcasts with? Well, and she goes into the latest Trump kind of misadventure or whatever.
And we laugh about these, starting in your kitchen recording podcasts, but like Theo Von, the host of This Past Weekend with Theo Von, he's one of the top five podcasts consistently, and that's how he started. Was just like, if you go on his website and go back to his first episodes, it's just him on a computer chatting at himself.
But because of the fragmentation you mentioned, a considerable sector of the population never heard of them.
Yeah, and Melina and I, my co-author, we as we've been talking about this, there are so many creators and individuals who we know by name and have listened to a lot of content by, and so it's hard to remember. Most people have never heard of them. For a subset of the population, they are key players. They're like the only person that they trust, but a lot of people have never heard of them.
Anything else you want to add to what you've said?
Yeah, I think the key thing with podcasts is just kind of this concept of a parasocial relationship, where they really trust what they're hearing. As trust in mainstream media sources go down, trust in sources like a podcast go up. We used to, trust credentials and, legacy news organizations to vet and validate sources of information, and we just kind of defaulted to trusting those sources. In the absence of that, people are trusting friend relationships and one or two or three trusted voices on the internet. Absent any like, I care about this X, Y, and Z credential, it's, does this resonate with what I believe?
Yeah, you still have people who say, "Oh, it was in the New York Times,"
Yeah.
or I listen to NPR or whatever, or you know, they have their favorite local TV newscasters, and they won't, they don't want to watch the other ones.
Yeah.
You know? So same kind of thing in a way.
Yep.
That's Kyland Rutherford of the Center for Social Media, AI, and Politics at New York University, speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on February 23rd, 2026.